Like to call to order, please, the February 17, 2009 session of the House Subcommittee on Workforce Development. Good morning to everyone. We have quite a number of folks here today and a lot of folks from out of town. I'm going to, first of all, open an informational hearing, or meeting, excuse me, on the ACE Academy. And, Brian, I understand you're going to be doing introductions, yes?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, Brian Krieg, representing the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors Association, SMACNA. It's my pleasure to be in front of you again today. This is a little bit of a follow-up to when I was here about 10 days ago, and we were discussing workforce development issues, and I brought to your attention the new hybrid charter school that the building trades and contractors have organized in the East Portland area. It's known as the ACE Academy, and with me today are some representatives from the ACE Academy. I'll start with my companion next to me, Dick O'Connor, who came and visited with you last year. He is the head of the Oregon Building Congress. And Dick will start out by giving you a little background on how we formed the ACE Academy.
Fantastic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and honorable members of the committee. It's a delight to be here. And the last time I was here, we were talking about this charter school as a possibility. And I'm happy to say it's now a reality. And in a few minutes, Mike Taylor, who is the director of the school, and two of his students, Megan Lazowski and Marco Benoy, will come before you and tell you about the ACE Academy. Just a little background about Oregon Building Congress. We, in 1997, decided to try to become the school-to-work arm or school-to-career arm for the construction industry in Oregon. And to that end, we developed a mission statement to partner with educators to increase the quality and diversity of applicants into the building professions. We decided to start a charter school for several reasons. One has been the cut in career technical programs in public schools throughout the state. And the second was the emerging workforce shortage of trained and interested and capable people who could go into the construction trades, but also into the design professions as well of engineering and architecture. So given that reality, I was happy to say that the Oregon Building Congress received a call from Mike Taylor several years ago when he was the superintendent of the Park Grove School District. And he and Terry Neisler, who was the superintendent of Reynolds, called me into a meeting, and they said they would like to start a charter school in East County, and they would bring along the districts of Centennial and Park Rose and Gresham Barlow. And they did. And it was 2 years ago we started meeting, and I have to say the collaboration between industry and the educators was really heartwarming. And the distinctive aspect, I think, of this school is that it's a creation of both industry input and the best educational practices we know of. So we sat down and began to develop the proposals to the districts, and we had outstanding support from the school boards of each of the districts, and the proposal sailed through. I don't think there was one dissenting vote in among the four districts. And many of the superintendents of the school boards thought that we really needed more career technical education, and ACE Academy would fill a gap. The design of the Academy came about through the work of industry task force as well as educational task force. And they worked separately at first, And industry, we brought together and divided them up into contractors, tradespeople, architects, and engineers. And we asked them, what are the qualities that you want to see from the graduates of the ACE Academy? And they told us things like they wanted to see a good work ethic, they wanted teamwork, they wanted good communication skills, math ability. They wanted to have the students be cross-disciplinary in the sense that they wanted to know not just about construction or a particular aspect of construction, but they also wanted them to know something about the design process, about engineering and architecture. So we created this list, and then we gave that list of desired outcomes to the educational community, and we then asked them, okay, let's try to build a curriculum around these desired outcomes. So industry took the lead, and then the educators worked hand in glove with the industry folks to develop the curriculum. It was a tricky business because we were breaking new ground. And now I'm going to ask Mike Taylor to come up and also the students. And Mike will talk about how the school is designed to achieve these educational outcomes that were desired by industry. And the students will talk about what their real-life experiences are at the school. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, appreciate the opportunity to share what has become an exciting program at ACE Academy.
Excuse me, let me just interrupt briefly. Just for the record, because it is a public record, if you would introduce yourselves, give us your names.
Right. Mike Taylor, and I'm with I'm the director at ACE Academy.
Thank you.
Marco Benois.
Megan Lasowski, a student at ACE.
Thank you very much.
Okay. As Dr. O'Connor mentioned, I started with this when I was the superintendent in Park Rose, looking to create alternatives for students that were not available in our high school. And I can tell you that over 30-plus years in education as a superintendent and as a high school principal, I've made a number of attempts at creating partnerships as well as creating alternatives to the traditional school setting. And for several years, I had talked with the Oregon Building Congress about its ideas and concepts for this charter school, for a charter school, or for a program like this. We were fortunate in that three of our other partner districts, Reynolds, Centennial, and Gresham Barlow, have the Center for Advanced Learning, which is also a shared time charter school program. And it serves four high schools in three of our four districts. And it specializes in medical, IT, and engineering. And so when the Oregon Building Congress approached us, we said we would do it if we could do a shared time program. Okay, where the main school continued to provide the social interaction for students, continued to provide graduation requirements, took care of PE, music, all of the things that I believe as a public school educator are important to students. We also felt, and I felt strongly, that in order to get a full range of students, to give the fullest range of students the opportunity to learn in a different environment, then that environment needed to share the common environment. What I found over the years is kids wanted to come to school. They lacked things they wanted in school, but they basically want to come to school. And so we thought that a partnership would would be the richest opportunity. What I found in this partnership was really for the first time a true partnership of give and take. It was extremely difficult for the school to give up some of its unilateral authority when it comes to curriculum and directing students, and to truly listen to the industry about what it wanted. Because what I found is when you do listen, they really want the same things. Okay? But in all the other attempts, Perkins programs in the schools, or whether they were career experiences in the schools, the real involvement of industry, the up-to-date involvement, the expertise was always lacking. Even in advisory groups, they were advisory. They were always on the outside. In this program, what I think has made it a critical element that has made it successful is that they are a committed part, not just an advisory part. And if you look at our structure and our governance structure, they hold 5 seats on a board of 11. And we meet monthly with industry and talk about daily behavior of our students, daily outcomes for our students, as well as the overall program. We also were able, as I said, to follow the model of Cal. And Cal, the Center for Advanced Learning, took dozens of things, obstacles, off the table for us when it came to interacting with the schools. Because as an outside group, okay, or as a program in a school, you have a whole series of requirements to meet that are guided by counselors and by administration. So things like transcripting, things like when will grades get out, things like when will progress reports get out? How will we get this on the report card? Okay? These are important to people in the system. Cal was able to take dozens of those things off the table because they had spent 5 years working out those details. We were able to move to the next level of opportunity. And with the change in state law permitting credit by competency or credit by proficiency, we moved to a proficiency model and an integrated model. Okay. And in that case, what we've done is we've identified the outcomes or the standards in our subject areas, in architecture, engineering, construction, math, science, English, and a course we call workplace skills. And our students don't move from course to course to course. They don't move from English to math to science. We organize instruction based upon the outcomes and based upon projects, activities, and assignments. And for each of those projects, activities, assignments, etc., we have identified the content, the academic content, in those 7 areas that are associated with that activity. So students track both assignments or activities, and then they track the competencies within those. So we may do an activity all day. If we're going to do a skill activity like framing, we may do that all day. We'll go in a couple of weeks and we will spend 3 days welding. Okay? But we will have done the preliminary work days before that. Okay? And that unit may have some science in it. It's going to have some skills in it. It may have an English assignment in it if it's going to be maybe a description of what they're doing. But all those will be identified and tracked. So we have an integrated curriculum, and we have outcomes based upon proficiencies. We were fortunate to be able to put that together. It took us a while to figure out how to track that in a way that students were aware of it always, that we were aware of it, and then we could translate it back to progress reports and grades to report back on our homeschools transcripts. So our courses appear as courses in the home high school's report cards and transcripts. Our students graduate from their home high schools. So we appear as a program inside of those high schools. We don't appear as a necessarily as a standalone charter school. Charter school was really a vehicle to organize the delivery and the collection of services to serve multiple school districts. And so organizationally it's unique, but it's not necessarily that particular framework that makes it useful. It's the partnership that we're able to create using that vehicle. It also gave us the flexibility with staff, because we needed staff out of the trades. Whenever you put together a high school program, if you have a construction program, and one of our partner schools, Reynolds, has an excellent program, but to run that program, they have one person. Now, that one person's background is in the trades, but it's primarily as a carpenter. Okay? And he's primarily a finished carpenter. What we have in the partnership with our facilities, and we have four facility partners, we have over 100 full and part-time instructors who are associated with those facilities. So when we want to teach framing, we go to Willamette Carpenters Training Center. We ask them for journeyman carpenter trainers, and we have journeyman carpenter teaching framing. When we wanted to teach electricity, we went to IBEW. We sat down with their training director and said, we want to teach electricity. What are the critical elements? We worked out a lesson plan, and we taught the theory of electricity, the movement of electrons, etc. Their staff, a journeyman carpenter and a trainer, came to our facility and taught wire termination. Then our students went to their facility for 2 days and wired up a circuit, bent conduit, okay, learned how to bend conduit to the right angle using trigonometry sine to determine the angle to get the rise in a certain distance. Okay, next month, we will have all of our students out in the welding stations. They will be in all three facilities. And the instructors are the welding instructors from SMACTA, from IBEW, and from Willamette Carpenters. Trainers in those facilities. And we're using their facilities. So we didn't have to create and invest in 50 welding stations. They exist. Now, do we get to use them when we want them, as we want them? No. We go to them. When can we use them? The week of April the 1st, here to here, I have the facility and I have the station. We block that in, and then we teach to that. And we put that in our schedule. When can we have the floor and do framing? The week of November the 23rd, we will have five instructors and the floor's empty and it's yours. Okay? Would I have rather had it the week before? Maybe. But partnerships are about give and take. And what we get out of that is all the tools, okay? All the expertise. Okay. The materials, they have all the materials. All we had to do was pay for the waste. Because next week they take that same material and they teach their journeymen. Okay. Huge, huge partnership. Now, we're extremely fortunate in that we sit right in the middle, within a mile of four facilities. Okay. SMACTA, the Sheet Metal Training Institute, we're housed at the Willamette Carpenters Training Center, and IBEW NECA, the Electricians Training Center. In addition, we have the open shop AGC-supported facility of the Northwest College of Construction, which is a private college teaching, I think, 8 or 9 trades in the area, including heavy equipment operating those. And we use their facility floors along with their trainers. So that partnership has been extremely rich, and then the opportunity to do it in an integrated, curriculum-integrated environment and credit proficiency or credit by proficiency has made it a unique experience, okay, and a great opportunity, I think. So I'm going to let students talk about their experience in that setting.
And Marco, if you would please, even though we all know who you are, if you would just once again introduce yourself, because from this point forward, then our record, which is being recorded, will know that it's your voice. And 50 years from now, if you want to show your grandchildren what you said at their age, they'll be able to listen to the tape. So welcome and good morning, and thank you for coming out.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and honorable members of the committee, my name is Mark Benois, and I am an ACE student. Hello, my name is Mark Benois, and this is Megan Lazowski, and we are currently ACE students. Through ACE, we have acquired skills that could otherwise not be provided through our respective home high schools. For example, we have obtained workplace skills through projects out on the work floor and in the shop. The responsibility that has come through working with dangerous equipment and around dangerous equipment. The projects that have allowed us to work in teams, and the constraints that have furthered our ability to critically think and evaluate specific situations. From these useful skills, we will be better prepared for our future career paths during high school, skills that most do not attain until after post-secondary schooling. As an A student, I have obtained workplace skills while working on projects on the work floor and in the shop. For instance, in December, ACE students were assigned to construct a diminutive model roof out on the work floor at the Willamette Carpenters Training Center. In small teams, we were briefed by our instructor, Mr. Martin, on the general concept of how to build our roof. Moreover, it was then our responsibility as a team to go down onto the work floor and begin to assemble our roof. Through this experience, we not only learned how to build a roof, but we also learned the workplace skills and the responsibility behind involved throughout the construction of building the roof. In fact, it began with the perception of how to handle the tools, ensuring that everyone was safe and that no one was in danger of getting hurt while we worked with the dangerous equipment. It became our responsibility, while of course being monitored by our instructors, to maneuver this dangerous task in a safe manner. Towards the end of the project, it became apparent that the task at hand was not completed until every group was finished. After all, this solely did not only include the objective of assembling the roof, but also its aftermath. This included cleaning up, but also the responsibility within ourselves to help our fellow ACE students to finish working and also clean up in their surrounding workspace.
Hello, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Megan Lasowski, and I am a student at ACE Academy. A few months into ACE Academy, students like Marco and I were split into groups, including architecture, construction, and engineering students. Groups were made up of around 9 students who were chosen to work together to design, engineer, and construct a 2-level building that included an industrial area as well as a residence. This task alone would have been difficult, but when you're put into a group where you have to work with other students, incorporate their ideas, and fit the guidelines, it became more complicated than I originally perceived. I can remember a week after we first brainstormed, trying to find a balance between the building being both space efficient and being appealing to the eye. And I can remember spending hours sketching a floor plan that would flow, but that would also be remembered. This tested me as an architect in a way that I had never experienced, and I don't think I could have experienced at my home high school. A month after we were put into these groups, all nine of us had to work together to frame two walls. This was a great visual example of teamwork. After we had built the walls on the floor, we had to lift them into place and secure them. And if someone wasn't helping with this project, it was apparent, because you could tell that the wall wasn't stable due to the fact that it either wasn't in the 90-degree position or it wasn't secured to the ground. We are all coming from different high schools, but I'm sure that we all haven't seen teamwork in this exact light before. At our home high schools, when we're giving a project, sometimes someone will carry more weight than the others, and the person whose weight is being carried for them gets to skate through unnoticed. At ACE, we're held accountable for our actions, and we have learned that if you do not carry your load, your team does not carry the load, and your task does not get finished. And in the end, what matters is finishing your task. Marco and I are here representing ACE Academy to prove that we could not have the skills like responsibility, teamwork, critical thinking, and workplace skills that we have today with only attending our home high school. If any student within the program applies themselves to as many opportunities as possible, their desired potential to become what they want becomes more of a possibility, and we believe that it can be achieved through ACE Charter School. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. And now typically what we do is our committee would like the opportunity to ask you questions because, quite frankly, you're the experts in this arena, and we sometimes like an opportunity to be able to bore down and get additional information while you're here. Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Megan and Marco, thanks for coming and sharing your experience about ACE Academy. I have a question for each of you, the same question. Basically, if you could describe what drew you to ACE Academy, is it because of early premonitions for each of you that you aspire to be an architect or you aspire to be a builder? Or how did you get in ACE Academy and why?
Mr. Chairman and member of the committee, at Park Rose High School, that is where I'm from, there's not very many options as for classes other than theater, choir, arts, and none of those are to my interest, so I would be taking my four core classes, but I'd also have four elective classes that I'd have to take, so I'd take PE, another sports conditioning class, and other classes that weren't very useful for my future. When ACE became an offer at our school, I didn't really know what I wanted to go into at ACE. I just knew it was an opportunity to kind of expand my options for the future. And once I got to ACE, it wasn't then that I realized that I really liked the construction path, and now I'm interested in carpentry.
So you were originally just looking for a way to maybe express yourself or use your hands?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Chairman, Vice Chair, I started off last year in architecture at my home high school, and it was unfortunate because we had a very good engineering architecture program at Sandy High School where I attend. But we lost our teacher, and the person who became our new teacher wasn't as skilled. He didn't have as much experience, especially in architecture. And as a sophomore, I knew since freshman year that I wanted to become an architect. It's something that just always attracted me. And towards the end of the year last year, I was blessed with the opportunity to apply to this school, and I was accepted, and I just love it. It's amazing. It's something that I wouldn't be able to get at my home high school the way that I have at ACE.
Follow up?
Please.
I forgot to ask, what about grade levels? Megan and Marco both?
I'm a junior in high school.
Okay.
I'm a junior as well.
Okay.
Wonderful. Representative Dembro?
I have a lot of questions, and first of all, let me say it's my honor to represent Park Rose, and I look forward to coming out to the school and just seeing how everything works in person. I'm very, very impressed with what I'm hearing, I have to say. I'm curious about sort of the next steps after you complete the ACE Academy, what your plans are for where you go next, and then to the principal, just what the structures are for, you know, transitioning your graduates into either further training programs or direct entry into apprenticeships. Are there arrangements where your students will get automatic entry or priority entry into the trades? I'm curious about hearing.
Mr. Chairman and member of the committee, at ACE Academy for my future, I've been lucky enough to have Mr. Martin as a construction teacher because for his entire life he was a carpenter, which is also my interest. And he has taught at Portland Community College, which offers construction management. And so I've actually talked to him, and he's set up for myself to go talk to Spencer Hinkle, which is the director of the construction there. And so just the connections are very helpful at ACE Academy. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Chairman, Representative, my plans this summer, I plan on having an internship with an architect. Our architectural teacher at ACE is setting up internships for most all of the architectural students. And then after that, after I graduate from high school, I would like to either attend U of O or Washington State for architecture, and then be in an apprenticeship for a few years. And hopefully, I'm not sure if I want to open my own firm yet, but we'll leave that for later.
One of the advantages of having the partnerships, and one of the advantages of working with the Oregon Building Congress, is that we literally have hundreds of partners. It is our goal to give students an internship, a practicum, or work experience during their stay with us, especially during the summer from juniors to seniors. And we've been pretty successful with that. We're also setting up we call an e-mentorship, where we have groups of students who interact online with a group of folks in the field representing architecture, construction, engineering. Several programs that are similar to ours have different arrangements with the apprenticeship entry. So looking at the Clark Skill Center in Clark County in Vancouver, looking at the Sabin Skill Center depending on its programs, and going back sometime looking at Benson, many of our partners in the apprenticeship trades had direct entry from those programs, but those were dependent upon track records for students coming out of those. All of our partners have assured us of an advantage for our students. They're waiting for our track record and our final product to say at what level do we admit them. There tends to be in the union trades an advantage for entry, so that the screening process to get in to those apprenticeship programs is extremely difficult. Every month, and sometimes twice a month, there's 100, 125 applicants lined up outside our door, since we're in the same building, going through the interview process. Well, And then once they get to the top of that interview process, then they go out, they need employment, and then start through the training process. Some programs offer direct entry. What we have with in that process in the interview is a distinct advantage for students to be able to say, we've been through this program. But we don't have any guarantees yet for placement in that. Now, in our open shop program, we use the same training materials, NCEER training programs that they do, and we can certify our students through certain units, and those units or instructional units are waived when they go through the program at the Northwest College, for instance. Then we have direct links, and most of those personal links, like at PCC. And PCC's program tends to be a residential program. Our union programs tend to be in commercial programs. So directing our students beforehand to the right program and their right track is big. Our engineering instructor is from Oregon State. We have college credit for our engineering program, Project Lead the Way. We'll be a certified program next year. That will have hopefully Mount Hood credit. We're just on the verge of getting that right now. It will have credit through OIT in engineering. And when our program is certified, which we hope is this year, our engineering credits will be acceptable in 67 universities across the country by virtue of our association with Project Lead the Way. So many of those programs we're developing right now and trying to firm up, but we're working on the traditional college credit pieces in engineering and architecture, and then advantageous entry into the apprenticeship programs. But we're not in a position to make guarantees yet until we get kids closer to the outcome.
Right. But that's probably your long-term goal.
That's our long-term goal. We try to prepare students. We meet the minimum graduation requirements so that we have community college entry. We encourage students to take advanced math and advanced science at their home high school if they're on a university track so that they can meet those. The other one is that entry into the professional schools, well, having had the mentorship.
Excuse me, I'm going to have to interrupt here. We're having brief technical difficulties with our recording equipment, and we'd like to make sure that we have you on the record, so if you could just... are back on the record. And, Mike, my apologies for stopping you in mid-sentence and probably mid-thought.
That's okay. The other thing about our postgraduates, while we prepare them either for a college program, community college, or continued training, we find a lot of students still making a decision about what they want to do. We are clear that our introduction is to the design-build industry. And while it's architecture, construction, and engineering, we expose our students to all three. And we do find students who've moved back and forth or come in with one notion and moved over. But one of the things our partner said is that that the architect understanding the tradesman and the trade understanding the academic engineers and architects was extremely important. And part of achieving that is in our teamwork, and part of it is in exposing everyone to the activity. So everyone did a plot plan and a floor plan on the house that Megan was talking about. Everybody went down and framed the two walls, everyone. But it was the construction folks who led the team in the construction. Architects took the floor plan that everybody built, and they expanded it out to a complete structure. So everyone is introduced. Everyone did electrical. But the construction folks went back and wired a full wall. So,
thank you very much.
Thanks.
Representative Holvey, followed by Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really just wanted to thank Dick O'Connor for, you know, his perseverance in working with the Oregon Building Congress. I hosted him 10 years ago, I believe, at a training center down in Eugene where he was trying to do outreach to high school teachers to try to show them how important mathematics was and applied mathematics and how it could be utilized by partnering. And this is sort of that has come to fruition with the ACE Academy, obviously. And so I'm really excited about this whole program. They're bringing all these resources together that were previously not being really utilized by our school districts is just a great step forward, and really provides great opportunities for kids to go a different direction if they so choose. My question for you, Mike, though, is just pretty basic, pretty simple, maybe. Or maybe not. I'm kind of curious, you know, utilizing all the different people that you utilize for training and teaching, and I'm curious, as a charter school, you still follow the rules of the Department of Education, and how do you navigate that with your trainees, since they're probably not all licensed teachers? Somehow they get certified with the Department of Education or not. I'm just kind of curious how are we getting through those roadblocks, I guess.
That is one of the advantages of the charter school, is that it makes those roadblocks more navigable. For instance, at a charter school, only 50% of your staff needs to be TSPC certified. Now, they still have to be highly qualified under No Child Left Behind in the core areas. So math, science, English, all are core areas, and they have to be highly certified, highly qualified, which generally means a master's degree in content area. But your other teachers, architecture, construction, engineering, any of the trades, okay, they can make up your, what's called in the charter group, your registered teachers. And they need only have the qualifications, sometimes an AA degree, sometimes a bachelor's degree. We have a mix of teachers. We have three certified teachers, and then we have two registered teachers. Our science teacher is highly qualified, but not TSB certified. Our construction teacher is is not TSB certified, but registered. And then our engineering teacher, he's a TSB certified math teacher. So charter schools make that more doable. When we use the instructors from the trade centers, like in the welding or the construction or the electrical, we treat them as guest lecturers or guest teachers. We always still have one of our instructional leaders there. So, and they are not responsible for the design of the overall instruction or the final, I'm going to say, grade, as it were. That still belongs with one of our registered or certified teachers. So, but it's much easier in the charter setting than it is in the traditional setting. So,
thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that was half one of my two questions. Representative Holvey asked that question about the teaching with the trades. The other question I have is, actually there's two other small questions. One is, how much resistance did you have when you first started this project? Because it is one of those things, and I just hate this answer, is we've always done it this way. And this is definitely not one of those, we've always done it this way. And the second question is, how does the money flow with the child, or how does that work exactly?
Okay. Let me answer the money question first, but the money flow is per charter school agreement, and 95% of the state's school support, the basic school support amount, follows the student to us.
5% is retained by the district.
And then the remaining is retained by the district. And in our case, since we're a shared time program, we get half of that, because we have a student half time. Five of our six high schools are on an A-B rotating schedule, so we have them one day, and then they're at their home school the other day. So, now, again, part of that was because of Cal, because Cal had 5 years to iron out a schedule to get the same schedule at five high schools, which is unheard of. Then the second question, which was?
This was a test, you know.
I know. Short-term memory.
How much resistance did you have from breaking out of the norm?
Well, because this started at the top, okay, so it was the four superintendents and OBCs who said, let's do this. And the four superintendents said, let's get it done. And all the, but you can't, but what about, we said, we'll figure it out. Okay? So that's the first start. Then the next level of resistance that we saw is at the school level. And part of it was around the integrated curriculum and the credit by proficiencies. Dr. O'Connor had pointed out that we had started with two groups. We had a group of industry curriculum committee, which was anywhere from 15 to 30, depending on the day. And we had a group of school folks. So we had the curriculum directors from our four districts, principals who were advocates, and some high school curriculum support folks, and talked about what we wanted and what had to be in place for an English credit. Then we put together a group that represented the academic leaders from the four high schools. So we had an English teacher from each school, a science teacher, a math teacher, come in for a day-long process. And we we shared the big concept with them. And one English teacher in particular literally brought her list of novels that had to be read for junior credit in English. Okay? Beowulf and those important things. Okay? When she left, and she was tough all day. When she left, she went back to her vice principal at her high school and said, "You know what? It's darn tough, but I think they can do it. And what I want to know is, why wouldn't you teach everybody like this? That is, may list the competencies, and when you get to the competencies, you've got them." But we brought them in, and we brought key teachers in very early to take a look and buy into the notion that it was these outcomes that we wanted. And so we got some buy-in from teachers. We had the structural buy-in from the curriculum folks and overcame some of that resistance. We've had about a 50% change now in curriculum directors, and in some ways we start over again, convincing them that, yes, we can do this. It's a constant awareness, and it's always having it articulated just a little bit better than some other places. We had a superintendent who wanted to see our articulated English curriculum. So where's the outcomes? Where's the outcomes? I said, well, you know what? I started by going to our five high schools and asking them. And only one out of the five high schools had them articulated. And it was interesting because his response was, well, the expectation is set there and everybody knows what we're going to do, but yours need to be articulated. So we are able to lay out for you the English standards exactly. And we can grab an assignment and tell you exactly what English outcome we want in that assignment. And we can show you the grading rubric on a 6-point scale for that outcome in that assignment. And that's online. And our students, when they get an assignment, go online and look at that rubric. So part of it is we've had to create more credibility in our design than you might have done in a traditional high school in order to do that. But, you know, we stay talking to our curriculum folks, to our principals, constantly.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just to follow up on that. And then the reason I ask that question is because, as we've discussed here as a committee about the need for better math skills, better reading skills, better comprehension and writing skills coming out of high school, I kind of met the same resistance discussing with a curriculum person just what you explained, that, well, no, we've got to put them in this box and they have to have the outcome by this. And yet what you're doing is you're kind of outside the box here, to use that term, but you're allowing people to learn at their own levels. You're allowing people to learn at their own pace and the way they want to learn, but they get the point at the end. They're across the street. They may not cross the street in the same manner that traditional school crosses the street, or that they would like all students to march across the street, but you're getting there in maybe a much more efficient way than the school itself.
Within the school, we use a proficient, sufficient, and incomplete system. So a proficient is you are good at it. Sufficient is you can do it. And incomplete is you're still working on it. So students will tell you that we don't take assignments. Assignments aren't done until they're satisfactory. Students will tell you that an assignment can haunt you forever.
Look at the grandeur.
Because you can't just turn in an assignment, take a D or an F, and get out. So sometimes what happens in schools is they have all those great ideas about what they're going to teach, but they'll take a D and F in assignment and move on. If, if you haven't finished writing the complete paragraph, okay, you may be all year writing the complete paragraph. And as we say, we may never get to Beowulf.
Marco and Megan, I know that you've sat patiently here through our discussion. Were there any points that you would like to elaborate on?
I'm good right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got to say that's a life lesson, that you have assignments that haunt you. My wife will tell you I've got assignments that have been haunting me for years. So quick question. I'm kind of curious, this model, I don't know if there's other places around the state that are situated such where you would be able to have the kind of partnerships that you need. I can probably think of a couple that could work here and there, but I think that'd be something interesting for Dick perhaps to explore and some others to see whether there's other opportunities for us to do similar types of charter schools. But as well, I'm kind of curious, Representative Esquivel asked a little bit about the money, you know, aspect of it. And so I'm curious, are there financial arrangements that you've made or need to make with the training center partners and how does that work?
The training center partners have been very cooperative and extremely supportive. In the charter school startup, you have charter school startup grant. Right now, that's making up about 30 or 35% of our budget. About 20% of our budget is in donations. And in contributions, and that is cash contributions. And about 50% of our money right now in this operating year is coming out of state school support. So it costs just about twice as much to run this program as we get from the state to do that. In addition, we have a technology grant from the local cable franchise, which is why every student has a laptop and why everything we have is online, and we have wireless access throughout all of our points. But that's a one-time grant. Now, part of that money is used in the startup because our engineering program, while the curriculum is, quote, free, the instructional materials for that are about $25,000 a year to teach that program, to do that program. But that's mostly one-time expense. So we are very dependent on that. The training facilities or the organizations behind them or the unions behind them, and Dick could speak to this more appropriately, have been very generous in cash contributions. The training facilities themselves have gone to their trustees and asked for support in instructional time. So we have not been charged for the instructional time from either electricians, sheet metal training, or the Willamette Carpenters. And they have approached their trustees, as I understand this, asking for that and estimating what we have. Next year, we will go to them with an exact proposal. So for our junior class, this is what we want. We need a day of introduction, X number of hours in instruction, and so on. In our senior class, we'll do the same thing. Now, They've warned us, or you know, shared with us that there's a limit to that, okay, and that at some point they'll have to say, well, you know, we need to recover our costs with that, and then depending, some of them it's just out of pocket costs as opposed to capitalizing that cost. One of our big expenses is facility rent. We do rent our classroom space. And that's a that's a good percentage of our cost, and it is for a lot of charter schools, because your public, you know, you get a percentage of the operating money. You don't get that bond money that they built the school with, and so space is a cost that we have to take out of what everybody else takes out of operations. But so far they've been very generous in time, and we will need to formalize that over the next couple of years as we define exactly how much time we need.
I want to thank each of you very, very much for the presentation that you've made here today. And I've had a couple of notes passed to me already by the committee members that this is one of the better, if not the best, presentation that we have had here, particularly on kind of the school to work transition area. You have just done a tremendous job. I am so pleased to see that we have two students who are juniors who, rather than, for lack of a better word, rather than banging around for a decade and trying to find out what career path is going to fit you, as juniors in high school, you already have a career selected and are well on your way to a path of success. Not only your mechanical skills, but your scholastic ability shines here today. And I congratulate you for the hard work that you've done in making sure that you're going to have a successful career. And I would add that your focus on your own personal career has made your school and your program a success as well, and will mean that you have an ongoing program for students that come after you. So congratulations to each and every one of you, students as well as teachers, as well as the trades. Thank you again. I am going to suggest that the Education Committee consider bringing you back. So if they're in agreement, we might have a return performance here.
Good.
With that, I'm going to close the informational hearing. And again, thank you to our guests very much.
Thank you.
Do we need a minute for you to set up? Okay, and with that, I am going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2398. And we had several witnesses that were left over from our last committee meeting, and I'm going to try and get these folks on first. And I would like to call up, please, Mr. Conkling and Mr. Bomberg, please. Good morning, and my apologies for having to carry you over for another day. Welcome to our committee, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Gary Conkling, here today representing the Associated General Contractors in support of House Bill 2398. I've supplied written testimony, so I will actually just make a couple of extemporaneous comments. First off, I appreciate the opportunity to be juxtaposed next to the folks talking about ACE. As members of the Oregon Building Congress, the AGC takes a great deal of pride in that effort. construction skilled trades are critical to our success. We won't be able to build the buildings, repair the highways, build communities without these skilled tradespeople. We're pleased that we're able to pursue this effort in conjunction with our workforce partners. So we take a great deal of pride in ACE and look forward to see it not only succeed but hopefully replicated in other areas. I just want to touch on two additional issues. First, As we think about a job stimulus strategy, a rebuilding Oregon strategy, I hope that you will consider not only investments in our roads and bridges, which we certainly would encourage you to do, also investments in our buildings and other infrastructure, which we hope you do. We build all those things. But in addition, we hope that you will invest in the men and women who build those things. I think a job stimulus program that includes an investment in workforce will pay the longest-term dividends, even though our highways and our bridges and our sewers and our schools and colleges are all critical. The men and women of our state who are the workers that build them and will build other things are critical, too. So I encourage you to work with leadership and others in the building and seeing a job stimulus package that covers that scope. The last point I'd like to make is that the proposal in 2398 that talks about engagement tool with young people benefited and was informed by research that coincidentally my partner and my firm did, Tom Island. That was actually fairly extensive research talking to young people who had gotten lost in the system, as well as some people who, despite maybe being lost, had found their way to the skilled trades, often in their mid-20s, sometimes late 20s, to really find out who they would listen to, who would they get good advice from, and what kinds of things would help them really pay attention, at least give some of the skilled trades an opportunity, as well as trying to identify some of the obstacles that they saw to working in the skilled trade area. And that research showed that there are some fairly unusual people, maybe not surprising at the end of the day, but nonetheless somewhat non-traditional people that they listened to. Just as an example, football coaches. Now, you would say to yourself, there's nobody that appears on most people's list, and yet for a lot of young men, a football coach advice from that coach can mean a lot. We probably have never thought about reaching out to that particular group or to ministers. Priests, ministers are another trusted group for a lot of young men and women who are looking for what should I do. So there is research that is, I think, if not groundbreaking, at least different, that suggests that some of the voices that are most important to the young segment of our population that we're talking to are not the traditional ones inside the school system. In addition, what a lot of students, or young people, I should say, what they're looking for is a sort of non-threatening, friendly place to explore what some of these careers might be like. My young son, who currently is a cabinet maker in Junction City, an unemployed one, unfortunately, at the moment, but it's been an interesting personal lesson for me to watch his evolution. And it's interesting that he sort of verified what our research found, is that for a lot of people, they want to explore. They really want a hands-on. They want to be able to touch in a way that's real to them, which is, for a lot of young kids, video games. Simulations. It's how they kind of learn. It's their modality. It wouldn't work for me, but it does give them a chance to explore and to really overcome some of the problems, such as, well, will anybody respect me? Is it really something that I'd like to do? Is it something that has a future? So all of this, by way then of conclusion, is the proposal that's in 2398 for a robust approach to engaging, creating engagement tools that are online, otherwise, is a critical part of a process of reaching communities and influencers to activate them to help encourage people to go to a place where they can find a safe, interesting, challenging environment to explore careers, and then to make sure that that same engagement tool connects them with the range of places where they can go to find mentors, to find other information. In other words, to make sure that it isn't just a one-way conduit, but that it is a complete tool that allows people to explore and discover and ultimately touch base with a human being or at least a good system that can provide them information and give them a path forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Good morning, David. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. And as you said, we're sort of the leftover testimony, which has sort of an advantage of having following Gary, Normeter, Andrew McGough, and others from last hearing. There's a lot of what I can say is the City of Portland, too, agrees with much of what has been said. The city sees workforce training as a vital component of community and economic development, and there's a very startling and figure that I'm really embarrassed to say, which is that 57% of the eighth graders in Portland today will graduate with their peers when it comes on time in high school. We have a serious problem engaging the youth in our educational system and engaging them in a path that will lead to living wage jobs in the future.
David, would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Dave Barenberg, City of Portland.
Thank you very much.
And the I was trying to be anonymous with that embarrassing statistic. it really is one that the City Council sees as just something that we need to, as a community, rally around and try to adopt programs to be able to engage our youth on this. So with that, we see that this bill, 2398, provides a number of mechanisms to really try to take on that issue and engage the youth. I really pile on to Gary's testimony that, you know, we really do need mechanisms that reach our youth in the areas in which they are communicating. I have my focus group, which is an 18-year-old senior in high school, and clearly the online tools, the peer tools, the football coach, those are all effective mechanisms for communication. So we believe that the marketing piece of the bill is really an important one. It's innovative. We believe that the summer work opportunities, we know this works and is another critical element. The short-term transition centers, where we can really try people to some an introduction to gaining the skills to show up for work, to experience things hand-on and be tied into other resources in a non-threatening and in a way just to try to engage them. Increasing the availability of trainers, which really calls upon the expertise that's available in the community but really isn't harnessed. And then finally, what's really the city sees as critical is having an ability to really engage all the entities and partners in the community, business, labor, schools, government, nonprofits, under a rubric with the workforce boards to try to really address this issue with all of the resources and all of the interest there is in the community are really important components. And with that, I'd like to say thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we look forward to working with you, and we really appreciate the effort that this committee is making in trying to address what we see as a really critical issue. Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Any quick questions? Yes, Representative Dembrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Gary, I don't know if we've talked about this, but did your research show that one of the things that young people are interested in and would be receptive to is the whole area of green collar, you know, sustainability, you know, et cetera? I've always felt that if we can frame a lot of these conversations around efforts with sustainability and see these jobs as part of a kind of green core to combat global warming, say, that these are things that young people really could get excited about. And I wonder if your research supports that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dembrough, it does. It shows that the real battle line is some of the notions about skilled trades that they're outdoors, they're cold, they're hard. We export jobs overseas. They may not be, you know, long-term jobs. Versus the personal reward. And certainly the ability to be contributing something, looking like you're building a new world, would very much be part of a self-esteem pattern that's critical for people to make the choice to pursue these areas. You know, it's easy to assume that if a student isn't really on his or her way to college, that they'll sort of stumble into the trades. But that's actually not true. You don't stumble into them. You have to actually go find them. And we need to find ways to make sure that it's an honorable path. When people get there and they are in the skilled trades, that isn't the problem. The problem is the hallway that leads you there is not so clear. It's not perfectly lit. And so our research shows that anything you can do that creates a sense that this is a worthwhile thing, this is an honorable thing, will help encourage people to walk down that hallway.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And David, the 58% figure that you gave us of students graduating with their peers, was that statewide or for the city
of Portland? City of Portland.
City of Portland.
57%, yes, Mr. Chair.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very, very much for your testimony. Certainly appreciate it, and thank you for coming back a second time. With that, I'd like to call up, please, John Wyckoff and Cam Preuss. Good morning and welcome to both of you.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Community College Association. I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. I have written testimony for you, so I'm going to make a few points. Somewhat outside and related to my written testimony. First, I want to thank the committee for giving good focus to this issue. This is something that is core to the mission of the community colleges. We believe very strongly in the kind of work that you are trying to get at. We really applaud bringing focus to this issue. We are also a part of, you heard a little bit about the Workforce Alliance's Skills to Compete Oregon coalition. We are leading members of that coalition, and I just want to talk very briefly about that, the point being to really raise awareness about the importance and the critical significance of middle-skilled jobs in the economy, and those are those jobs that require more than high school but less than a bachelor's. These are a critical part of Oregon's economy. We're wanting to be a part of these efforts, are a part of these efforts to raise awareness about that. In the last census, before the last recession that we were in, Oregon had about 59% of Oregonians had above high school education, and at that time we actually ranked pretty well nationally in that area. Since then, you know, after that, we had a pretty serious recession where in the community college system alone we went from serving 406,000 students down to about 357,000 Oregonians. So those were folks who were not able to get skills and who were not able to get training they needed to be to get back into the workforce. It is sort of an unhappy coincidence that we are just now getting back to serving almost that number of students as we cruise headlong into another what appears to be pretty major recession. In some ways, this recession provides, the recession we're in, provides the perfect context for how important this sort of the work is. the unhappy irony is the recession also undermines our ability to do this kind of work fiscally. But it provides, shows us how important it is to have these skills, whether they're basic skills or career skills, certificates, those sorts of things. A perfect example might be, this might be a somewhat exceptional example, but the pin that Representative Huffman is wearing, wind turbine technician program at Columbia Gorge. These are folks who are getting jobs now, who are going into the workplace in family wage, high demand jobs. And I mean, I think it's what we see today is folks who don't have basic skills, folks who aren't able to get into a career path, are the most, or don't have the skills to put them on a career path and be competitive, are the most vulnerable in times like this, that are the most likely to lose work and to be laid off. And so we really understand the importance and want to work with you moving forward on how to continue to do this kind of work and align it in the best way possible. Having said that, we just want to share a few concerns that are very much related to the fiscal environment that we're in. In the current language in the bill, the analysis done by CCWB about the costs, there are significant costs associated with some of these programs, programs that we know to work well. The reinstatement of a summer program for young people to get access and to see sort of how these sort of career paths can put them on a good path. We have seen that these work, and having dollars to do that is critical. But would want to ask the committee to really take a look at what we don't want to be is at sort of fiscal cross purposes where we're trying to align and trying to put investment into important areas where at the same time we would have to be pulling them out of other areas trying to work together on the same mission. And so we just ask you to take a look at that and make sure that we aren't sort of at fiscal cross purposes as we all share the same goals here. Beyond that, I think just like to thank you for the work that you're doing to raise awareness around workforce and to sort of do this in the most effective way that we can in Oregon. Thank you.
John, thank you very much, and appreciate that support, too. Kim?
For the record, Cam Preuss, Director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, Chair Witt, members of the committee, I'm here primarily to answer any questions you might have about the fiscal that the department did on the bill. I'm aware of the testimony that James Sager from the governor's office gave last Thursday. There's not a lot I can add to that. Except that we do now have a federal stimulus package, and in that federal stimulus package is the anticipated dollars for a summer youth employment program. Right now, expected to be about $12 million. We expect that money to be released from the Department of Labor within 30 days of signing by the president, which is today. We have 30 days then to move that money out to the local level. So as we speak, we are in conversation with some of the local directors, workforce directors that were here on Thursday, Andrew McGough, Chris Latimer, to name the two, about receiving their plan for the expenditure of those funds. Oregon is expected to put about 10,000 youth to work this summer with those resources. So just wanted you to know that at least that part of the stimulus package is fairly clear, and it's clear because it has stayed the same from the House version through the Senate version through the compromise version to the final version, unlike many other aspects of the Stimulus or Recovery Act, which I still don't understand completely if we're going to get any resources, but I did want to make sure that you were fully apprised of that piece.
Thank you so much. This is Oregon, and may it rain those federal dollars on us profusely. And let's hope that enough money comes down that we're able to do some of the projects that this committee has recommended. And I know that the governor's office and the community colleges have already undertaken. Committee members, I ask you to be mindful of the clock. I will if anyone has questions, if they're brief, we'll entertain a question or two. Yes, Representative Dembro.
Hi, Cam. Just, you know, with respect to the Summer Institute, so this is one-time money, right, just for this summer. And so do you see a way to leverage this summer experience into something that can have some kind of sustainability, that can be a pilot in some way? Or what are your thoughts around that? And A and B, how shovel-ready is the Summer Institute, to use that term? And then C, would this apply to all youth? I mean, could disadvantaged youth be targeted, or dropouts, or use this as a vehicle for drawing young people back into the educational system? I guess I have a lot of questions about it. So,
Chair Witt and Representative Dembro, this is one-time money as we understand it. Pardon me if I'm repeating testimony you've heard. The Summer Youth Employment Program used to exist under a previous Federal Department of Labor program called the Job Training Partnership Act. It was phased out for reasons that we can go into at another time, but research to date says it is probably the most successful retention program available for youth to ensure that they stay engaged in school, is to have a meaningful and, I'm going to use the word, wraparound experience that is not disconnected from their regular school. Even though it's employment, it's connected. So your question was, is it just, you know, go off and do busy work? No. Well-designed programs have both educational and work experience components and are connected with the school both before and after. This is a program that starts the 1st of May. Funding begins flowing the 1st of May so that the student can be captured while they're still in school, have that summer experience, and then go back to school. Shovel ready? Absolutely. When we first got an inkling that this was in the hopper, lots of conversation at the local level about ramping up and increasing capacity. And your third question I missed.
It was just about the student population. Will it also...
Yes. Thank you. Representative Dembro, these funds are targeted to at-risk students. They're at risk of dropping out. They're economically disadvantaged, or they have additional barriers to completion of high school or employment. So they are targeted to a particular population that has some difficulty in staying engaged in school.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And just a reminder for everyone here, as I try to manage our time, we have two more panels to go after this one. So, Representative Holvey.
Mr. Chair, I will pass my
thank
question.
Thank you. Much appreciated, Vice Chair Huffman.
I'm sure everybody appreciates
it. Chair Witt, thank you. No question, but Cam, homework assignment, if you could, please. Could you get, and this is selfish so that I can be a hero to my district, if you could get me an outline of what youth would be covered under the program, that would be likely applicants, what program or programs we anticipate being infused, mm-hmm. and the appropriate age range that would be covered under this. I would appreciate that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huffman, I anticipate that all members would probably like to have at least a snapshot of what is going to be available across the state, so
yes.
Could certainly provide that.
Thank you.
That would be enormously helpful, not only for this purpose, but for many others. So thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to call up now, please, Kelly Ross and Gary Gassoin. Good morning to both of you gentlemen, and thank you very much for your appearance today. Please decide between yourselves who goes first.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kelly Ross, and I'm appearing before you today on behalf of the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce. The State Chamber of Commerce is made up of more than 70 local chambers of commerce around the state, and we come in support of the bill before you this morning. It was interesting last year. We did regional meetings throughout the state with chamber members and chamber staff to get a sense from them what their priorities are and main concerns for this legislative session, and without exception, wherever we went around the state, the top issue on everybody's mind was workforce development. And going through the State Chamber's Board of Directors, that was designated as the highest priority issue to get involved with in the legislative session this year. And so you'll probably be seeing a lot of me and hopefully local representatives from chambers as you conduct your deliberations on the bill. And it was interesting that what we heard around the state is that not only are employers in need of well-trained labor on a technical basis, but really are concerned about the lack of what you would consider a work ethic among the applicants they're seeing for positions in terms of punctuality and appearance, customer service. And so I think one of the benefits of this bill is that targeting the younger folks who are just getting into the labor force, that there's an opportunity to build on that and maybe correct some bad habits or lack of understanding or lack of appreciation for those important characteristics. But we are supportive of the bill and look forward to working with you as you continue this discussion.
Thank you very much. Very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt and members of the committee. My name is Gary Gossoin, and I heard you say Gossoin, which our last name's French, and we take anything that's close to it.
Thank you.
I'm chairman of Silver Eagle Manufacturing Company in Portland, and Silver Eagle's a company my father founded in 1933. It's an Oregon-based business. Our only location is Portland, Oregon, so we manufacture trailer equipment for transportation, heavy-duty truck carriers for hire, as well as the U.S. Military. We are employing 204 people as of today, and just as recently as last October, we were at 160. I'm going to mix my written testimony with some ad-lib, if I may.
Please.
I really appreciate that you are considering this bill and workforce. It's a critical issue, as people are pointing out. And I feel that this HB 2398 is really what Oregon needs. It provides a framework for specific actions I believe will strengthen our workforce delivery system. The ideas in HB 2398 represent practical solutions, things we can implement and immediately link to the workforce. And I think what you just heard from the ACE Academy folks lines up directly with the kind of programs that I'm part of the Manufacturing 21 Coalition propose. My company needs skilled workers, and they just aren't there, and I'll talk some reasons why I think that is. But first, I want to address three issues that underscore this bill. As I mentioned earlier, we're bucking the current economic trend. I'm here to say manufacturing's not dead, and if you want it to be dead, don't provide a workforce. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and I believe that people are being run away from the trades, which I'll talk to a little more. We have openings as of right now for assemblers, painters, and supervisors, and this bill will target those middle skills job. I think also that this bill will speak loudly to our institutions. Representative Esquivel, I appreciate your questions that I assumed were based around the momentum of the existing systems, and I think that's a big problem. I think the people who have been successful in academia see things through that lens, and so they believe other people's path is the same as theirs. And I suspect a number of you are familiar with the normal curve, and I believe that the normal curve distribution of people, just like we know there'll be tall people and short people, and they kind of fit this pattern, I believe skills are the same way, and those are people's innate skills. And if somebody is not driven towards mathematics, what we do is we really pour more mathematics into them instead of finding out what their gifts are. And I think a lot of what you heard from the ACE Academy is helping people find their gifts. And so I believe the current institutions are a little broken by the view of those who are very smart people but they view life around their own personal experience, and we've quit honoring people with other skills that are desperately needed in our world, our manufacturing community. And I heard that dropout rate from Portland, and it's just astounding. Actually, that wasn't the dropout rate. That was you don't get there. But isn't the dropout rate something like 30% in Portland?
I think it is for the state, isn't it?
Its relevance is the problem. And that was the beauty of what the ACE Academy was doing. People got to apply it. I remember I had a high school teacher who was a nut for literature, and she would play soft music and talk about the wonder of that. That didn't mean anything to me. I had no way to make it relevant. And when I have to talk to customers, I give them scale and relevance. If it isn't relevant to them, they don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear it.
That's right.
And scale is that 57% number. And I think it's just shocking. So working with their hands needs to be honored. It's an honorable trade. But that isn't the message you get in school. You're a loser if you can't do the academic thing. So you might as well go play the video games, and you might as well smoke pot, and you might as well hang with people that at least show some appreciation for them, whatever level that is. And I think we have to stop that. You know, I heard some admiration of those two fine young people up here that they knew where they're going. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't know where I was going in high school. But I did happen to know what my talents were. And back then, it was real mechanical ability, and I was playing music. And I started off on community college just to do a little bit of both. But here now I run a business in Oregon that provides family wage jobs with full benefits. And I will tell you, those other experiences, my mechanical experience helps me work with my customers. My performing experiences helps me get out and talk to people. So you just need to provide a full scale of people and meet them where they're at. I think business has been real patient with waiting for stuff. And momentum is huge for people that are in a system that they believe in. This is honorable. People trying to go down this path of making everybody, which I commonly call a mathematician or a scientist or an engineer. But not everybody's wired for that. And it's time to quit talking about stuff and telling us how hard it is to do and do some of these practical things you just heard today. I think this HB 2398 is a business-like response. And we heard about meeting kids where they are. We have to interest youth in these other careers. Manufacturing's cool. It's just cool to make stuff. We make some of the neatest things for the Defense Department and for trucks, and it's real and necessary. We're not making pet rocks. We need to provide these work experiences. People don't grow up on the farm anymore. They even working on a car. I was always working on my car. Now, I still can't fathom you go 100,000 miles before you tune it up. I was tuning up my car all the time. We need to create those effective transitions. And the schools do not prepare kids for the workplace at all. It's rare for my children to go 3 weeks steady without a day off. If you get a D, you heard that earlier, that's okay. Even in sports where everybody gets a trophy, everybody doesn't get a trophy in my business. And my business doesn't always get a trophy on every bid I put out. You do have to learn that you have to work harder, smarter, and make something happen. So we need to bring our resources into better alignment with what the real workforce problems are. And we need to measure those. And I think we heard some interesting measurements today about go for the proficiency instead of the grade, that they can demonstrate that you can do these things. So these empty middle skills pipeline is a big problem. Yeah, it's a little easier to hire people right now, but that's a temporary situation. Now we go through, I had a supervisor come up to me and say how happy he was that he got to keep 4 out of the 5. 2 years ago, we were keeping 1 out of 3. And a lot of that issue is either experience with mechanical type things or that work ethic. Now, on a higher level, I'd like you to think something else. When I talked about that distribution of talents, if we can honor people with what those skills are that I believe are God-given and direct them towards it, think of how much stronger our nation will be, and people will be fulfilled and rewarded. If you all think about when you're doing what you're best at, it just flows. And it just feels wonderful. And I think you have the power here. I think gold has really been laid at your feet with some of that demonstrated thing at the ACE Academy today to really make a difference. forget the business thing, just in people's lives. So I thank you for hearing my testimony today.
We certainly thank you very much for your testimony as well. Questions or comments for our panel? I noticed that both of you have brought a message that workforce is a key issue of importance, and that I liked the way you put it, Gary, that if we want to see manufacturing die, then we won't provide that skilled workforce. So I want you to know how important that message is, because I think you'll find five advocates here on this committee for workforce development, passionate advocates. But we also need to hear from business, and that business comes to us, as you have here today, mm-hmm. and tell us that workforce in the manufacturing sector is number one in terms of your priority, so that that way we know what the work that we're trying to do is validated by the business community, with whom we're trying to make sure that workforce is plugged into your pipeline. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much for that message. Certainly appreciate that. Our last panel today, please, Ralph Saperstein and John Chandler.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Chairman, good morning.
Please decide between yourselves who goes first.
Age before beauty.
Oh, you're so sweet. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here in support of this bill, but also in a professional and a personal capacity, if you don't mind.
Please.
On behalf of the home builders, the lack of trained workers in the trades has been critical. Back when we were building, and we hope at some point in the not-a-distant future to begin building again, we had a devil of a time finding carpenters, plumbers, electricians, and even in the unionized trades where they have existing programs, there weren't enough people coming through. A lot of what we needed on a job site, we could not find. It was a tremendous work shortage. It drove the price up. It drove my members nuts. And it was a huge gap in our ability to keep up with the production that was being demanded of us. I also just found out, not recently, I was hiring an employee to do continuing ed for contractors, which was passed last session. We're gearing up. I'm trying to staff it. My first thought was, I'm going to go find me a community college instructor or a high school shop teacher. And my naivete, I found there aren't any, or there's very few. I grew up in a small farming town. As kind of segueing into the personal aspect of this, I took metal shop, I took wood shop, I learned to work with my hands. I assumed, not having paid attention, that they were still out there. They're not. I couldn't go steal an instructor because there was no instructors to steal.
That's right.
We have done an abysmal job, members, of training our kids. We really have. And it's not just an employment issue, although that's the focus of this committee. It's a life issue. We raised an entire generation of kids that can't help their child put together a birdhouse because they never worked with a power tool. They never had the opportunity to see that as an option. And I want to take a little bit of issue with some of the testimony you heard before. It's not simply those who are disaffected with school. It's not just for the at-risk. The world is full of pinheaded PhDs and genius laborers. It has nothing to do with innate skills and intellectual. It has everything to do with what the previous speaker said, finding your gift. And the personal point of this is, back in a previous life, I'm a recovering attorney, as most of you know. I keep getting to the 8-step of the 12-step program and backsliding. One of the biggest junction points for me personally, as I say, I grew up in a small farm town. I grew up farming and ranching. Was when I was working in a sheep metal plant, and the company wanted to send me off to learn to get my journeyman's card. I didn't do that. I went to law school instead. I've never felt like I made a right choice. I made a choice. I could have been just as happy, made good money, had a good life with a good family, just as I probably have done, and wouldn't be here pestering you in all likelihood, so you may all wish I'd done the other thing, had I gone to sheet metal. We have created this false choice for our children in our schooling systems. When my kids went to the Portland school system, there was Benson, but you were made to feel like you're sort of slow if you went to Benson. It's a great program. Shouldn't be treated that way. There it is. This bill is a good step towards rectifying that, for getting the honor of work back in front of our kids, and quit pretending that everybody who doesn't go to college is somehow missing the boat, in giving options to our children. We gave some money. The Tillamook Local Association folded up here a year or so ago. We gave $15,000 to the Nia County High School construction program in the form of equipment we purchased for them. And that instructor told me he was teaching geometry, but he's doing it on a roof. He's getting kids who built a house who now can go into the trades. We need that all across this state. You're going to see other legislation coming forward from Commissioner Avakian that's going to be aimed at that. We support this bill. We'll support those bills when we get here. And, Mr. Chairman and members, if you need some help with your colleagues, if I can be useful in talking to them about the importance of this issue, either professionally or personally, just let me know when and where. As a personal hobby horse of mine, I drag the soapbox with me. I really believe in this issue. I think it is critical that we quit screwing around with our children's lives and put these options in front of them early enough to where they can make a choice, instead of having them get a bachelor's in English Lit and bouncing around through Burger King before they find themselves to a construction site. I'll take questions if you have time.
John, thank you very, very much. We'll hold questions until Ralph's finished.
I knew I shouldn't let him go first because, Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ralph Saperstein. I'm here representing Boise, located in St. Helens, and Boise Cascade, with locations throughout Oregon. I'm here in a Me Too. I'm one of the leftovers from last Thursday, and my Me Too role is to support the bill and support the previous testimony, including Mr. Chandler's. During these extremely difficult times, a well-trained workforce is still a very important matter. Although it may seem that our forest products industry is currently in a workforce not mode, we will once again, as John said, when housing recovers, we'll be in need of highly trained, skilled workers when the housing market rebounds. But even now, job training is key as we explore trying to address the use of Boise's closed pulp mill in Mr. Chair's district in St. Helens, where 350 workers were laid off last month. Job training these folks to help them find new family wage positions and provide Boise with the appropriate workers for a new configuration for that 70-year-old mill is essential. We believe that House Bill 2398 will help workers into and through the skills training pipeline to living wage jobs. And once again, like it seems that everybody that has testified last week and today, I have a personal story to add. My son, who is at Portland Community College, and for his third year of education, he tried a four-year college and is now trying community college. He still hasn't figured out what his path is, and I hope he hurries up, but he's not going to be kicked out. But anyway, he, going through high school and the community college, he was not aware that these skilled trades were available to him. And I've told him since Norm Eater has started Manufacturing 21, and I've tried to relay that to him, my son, and his friends about these options. But it's ingrained in him that the only option is a four-year degree and a white-collar position, even though he doesn't know what that means or how that's going to fit him. But providing other options early in life is essential.
Thank you very, very much. Questions for our committee? Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. Mr. Chandler brought up Mr. Avakian's bill, and I was in this committee, pre-session filed some bills and had great testimony, looking at our workforce and how do we deal with all the different pieces of it. And I guess in just speaking to this bill generally, House Bill 2398, it's hard not to read it and be supportive of all the pieces of this bill. But it does sort of bring up to me, that noticeably missing in this bill is any reference to apprenticeship training. And we just had the ACE Academy up here in front of us, who's working directly with Department of Education. and or a charter school, and with the apprenticeship programs and trades, and I just worry that this bill is, you know, so focused on the workforce investment boards and the community college systems as we know them today that we're really not taking into consideration the fundamental structure that I think that this committee needs to address, because I'm not sure that House Bill 2398 actually does that. And so I just bring that up because I think it's going the right direction, but I think we need to somehow bring this together with Commissioner Avakian's proposal that we looked at months ago but have not heard any discussion of since then. So just a concern that I hope we can bring that all together shortly.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, very quickly,
please.
I know you're out of time. Representative Holby, I couldn't agree with you more, and it's not just Commissioner Vaughan's bill. There's other proposals. Mm-hmm. You heard from the ACE Academy, which is part of the Building Congress. My Portland Local Association has partnered up with AGC, ABC, Builders and Contractors, and IEC, Independent Electrical Contractors, to form the Northwest Construction College. The problem is getting back into those high schools. I was a state president of Future Farmers of America. It's hard to find FFA chapters in this state anymore. You cannot find a VICA chapter, Vocational Industrial Clubs of America. There's only about two or three left. We've done, as I said, we've got to get back into those programs and teach kids early enough, which may require, you've got a bunch of moving parts here. You're going to have to do something with the ability to use a power saw before you're 19 and that kind of nonsense. But you've got to get back into the schools, get those programs in place. We'll help. Private sector will help. I've talked to Commissioner Vaughan about the fact I still use Craftsman tools when I'm doing projects because Craftsman stocked my shop class, and it became my tool for life. And you can go to the private sector and help fund these things, help put it together. We're not doing well either. This is part of our future, and getting our industries back on their feet is these sorts of programs and not encountering people when they're 25, 35 years old, having taken three cul-de-sacs, but when they're 15 years old, and get them into these trades through apprenticeship, through training, through education as part of their growing up. And I'll now get back off the soapbox, Mr. Chairman.
I couldn't agree with you more, and unfortunately, we've allowed ourselves to lose a lot of capacity. We've not only lost the shop classes, we've lost the FFA, and it's interesting that we're attempting to bring these programs back now in a quality manner, and we've seen examples today of the ACE Academy in terms of what used to loosely be referred to as the industrial arts. I've seen FFA chapters newly reinvigorated around the state. Met with their president last Friday. And it is absolutely...
I'd just like to mention for the record, Mr. Chairman, that the president's a nice young man. I went to school with his daddy, and he's from Culver, Oregon.
Yes, he is. Yes,
thank
he
you
is.
Very much.
Absolutely.
I'd wave the flag if we had one.
So we need, as we have heard several times today, to provide as many opportunities as we possibly can. And Representative Holby, you're exactly right. This bill is... its focus is not on apprenticeship. We will be hearing former Senator Avakian's bill, now Labor Commissioner Avakian's bill, beginning on, is it Thursday? So we will begin that process. And in terms of apprenticeship, I will defer to you, Representative Holby, because I know that you've had, I believe, several apprenticeship bills in the past, and hopefully those we'll be seeing those later in this session as well. Additional questions or comments?
Yes, Representative Ambrose. I'd just like to make a comment. You know, I haven't heard anyone speaking to this bill asking us to take an up or down vote on this bill. But rather to figure out a way to incorporate the spirit of the bill and elements of the bill, putting together with some of the other things that we're working on. And, I think that what we've heard is the urgency that we need to come out of this session with something very serious that will, encourage workforce development at this time. Ideally, not just put together another task force, but actually move forward. And I think the extent to which we can do that, I think we'll have accomplished a great deal this session.
Thank you very much. And Kevin's actually going to boiling down the various information that we put together with our chart of what the bill does, as well as what the governor's office has either done or intends to do, the testimony that we have received, and then as part of our work session process, we're going to sit down and see what it is that's left for us to make recommendations for and to move ahead on. So that's really precisely the direction that that I'm intending for the committee to move. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, just a quick thing here, Mr. Chair. Thank you. You know, this is, to me, like a broken record. We hear the same thing over and over again. I think it was very interesting that young people, what they understand their skill level, and they do understand that, they will get acclimated to that. But I thought it was very interesting because I had brought that up to a individual in the public school system, and they said, well, kind of laughed off, said, we've done that, and everybody wants to be a rock star or an athlete. Well, obviously, we didn't have the correct person or the correct procedure to ask the question, and that shows me a little bit about our system itself. Again, it brings up the lack of respect for the trades. This, again, comes up about every time we discuss this issue, and this is an inherent problem with the K through 12 system, that they are focused through the eyes of, gee, I'm a teacher, I went to school, so therefore everyone should go to college to become something. I always look at it like this. If everyone went to college and everyone was the engineer, who in the heck could build a bridge? But that's a different issue. The bottom line here that keeps coming out again over and over again is we are failing our kids. That's the bottom line. We are not getting them on the right track early enough. We are not getting them the right tools in the box for them to be successful when it comes to reading comprehension, writing skills, and math skills. Yet the ACE Academy has figured out a way to get kids across the street. It may not be the way the traditional schools do it, but they've figured out a different avenue. So therefore, I'm looking for great things from this committee because I know you have five people up here that are very dedicated to make this happen this session.
Thank you very much, Representative Esquivel, and thank you very much. And I may have occasion to take you up on your offer to assist with the educational effort. Thank you. And are there any other members of the public that wish to testify on House Bill 2398 at this point? Seeing none, hearing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2398. Kevin, any brief announcements for Thursday?
Yes, very briefly, Chair Whip, members of the committee, we have, in response to Representative Holvey, we do have 2399 scheduled for public hearing on Thursday. I understand there is a likelihood of a substantial amount of people who are going to testify. We are going to set up the process, and I hope it's been helpful, of the charts. Before you was placed today your own kind of scorecard for 2398. We're going to devise one of these for 2399 as well. I have underneath, you'll see on each of the boxes, there's the governor's proposal and what we wrote up on the board. Below that are just some of my notes, so I'll take ownership of that. Of what I heard, I have asked Mr. Sager that if there was any discrepancy with what I typed up to let me know, but that's the score sheet. We are going to be moving forward. One other quick follow-up note, I did sneak out very briefly after the ACE Academy had spoken and asked about whether or not there were other programs, and the impression that I was left with is it doesn't appear there are any formal programs in other sides, other parts of the state, but there have been some discussions that have ongoing. I think at least three of the words that I mentioned were the Medford, Eugene, and Bend areas, as well as Pendleton, but at this point it doesn't appear that there are any formal programs in place, but it is something that there was a glimmer in Dr. O'Connor's eye when I asked him about it. So I think there is some interest there if the committee is interested.
Anything further for the good of the order? I'm not seeing or hearing any. And with that, we stand adjourned until Thursday.